Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents She-Wolf and Cub by Lilith St. Crow, narrated by Jessica Marchbank. Prologue. Maternal Type. The bar was dim, full of faux smoke. Modern airsat cigs don't kill you like the old ones, and synthetic liquor doesn't bite, either. Everything's cushioned to keep warm bodies from hurting themselves. In return, they keep their heads down and their shoulders to the wheel. So do we. Across from me, wheat-haired Sam slumped, staring at the amber fluid in his glass, as if the ice cubes were going to suddenly spell out a message from on high. Maybe they were. His washed-out gray eyes shone briefly, a reflection of blue neon. The iris pigments have to be original. For some reason, nanos won't touch them. Still, within certain canons, you can get what you want once you're implemented. You can be striking, but not distinctive.
"Do this," he said finally, "and you'll be quits."
I blinked at the picture. Nice-looking kid, maybe 8 or 9. An engaging gap-toothed smile and a big, vertical surgical scar on his chin. Thick dark hair cut straight across his forehead. He was frowning slightly, not looking into the camera. Everything around him blurred. Telephoto, probably, and black and white. Color exposes things, like the shadow on the kid's cheek. Bruise or dirt or something else. Didn't matter. Not to me, or so I told myself. Paper's still best for this kind of work. The glorious future's swimming in it, even if it's made from reshuffled organic waste instead of precious tree fibers. It burns, and then it's deleted. Not like anything electronic. Convenience means trackability. I slid the glossy 8x10 back into the envelope. What is this shit? Faux smoke fog made a good frame for Sam's head.
Control knows your feelings. They're prepared to do certain things to overcome them.
No reason to take kid jobs, that's my personal view. Stay in the shadows and stay out of the under-18 pool. That's just good business sense. In love, war, work, what have you. Having rules is dangerous. You start following the rule instead of thinking. But at the same time, you need some guides when you're a liquidator or you go right off the rails. A fully implemented agent going off the rails is just begging for dismissal. So you just put your nice, technologically redone, almost invulnerable skull down and do what they want. It's the safest course. There is no overcoming my feelings. I slid the envelope across the table. It bumped the bottom of his sweating drink. His lips thinned. There are agents who don't mind that work. I do.
Triple your fee and quits. Or you can move into facilitation.
I don't want a desk job. I didn't add the codicil, and I don't owe you or the agency anything. Not that O really entered into it. Own, on the other hand, did. Such a tiny change, one little letter, and you had unvarnished truth. I'd figured that out on my own, smart girl that I am.
Clean slate, untraceable identity.
Please, how untraceable, if you're giving it to me? You think I'm stupid? I said no, Sam. I don't know if Sam is his name. I picked it because I had to call him something, just like he picked a name for me, and he'd been my handler ever since the agency decided I was indeed useful enough to warrant the cost of implementation. I wondered how many other agents he had, sometimes. He looks so average. Sam's the only name that applies. Not Joe, because Joe Smith, really? Not John, because that's so Freudian. But Sam Smith, the alliteration makes a good peg to hang him on.
Jess. He even said it kindly, staring at his glass. You can't say no. Referring to me that way instead of with a number or as agent? Interesting. Heartbeat, respiration, glandular balance all stayed the same. My glucose uptake spiked a little, the brain inside its lovely, indestructible casing perking up. Galvanic skin response stayed flatline, though. Full implementation gives you near-perfect control over the body's autonomic. You have to start watching for psychological tells instead of physiological ones. Dear old Sammy, fully implemented too, was flatline as well. After you're redone, well, you're just the messenger. Doesn't pay to shoot you. Though they pretty much always try. Doesn't pay to kick, because the agency always kicks harder. Doesn't pay to do anything but toe the line, ride the rail, nod and yes, sir, grin and bear it. I don't do kids. It surprised even me. For one thing, I'd used audible communication instead of the sub-vocal grumble that's standard for meets. For another, I put a finger on the envelope and shoved it. Again, the sturdy wet paper crinkling a little as it pushed his glass. Another fractional application of force, and the drink would end up in his lap. Unless implemented reflexes kicked in. Keep it down. He stayed sub-vocal, and that irritated me. Audible again, this time consciously. Is this how you got into facilitation? None of your business. Score one for me, I'd forced him to shift to audible two. Bonus? He even looked irritated. I decided against dumping his drink in his lap. There are other agents. There are always other agents. A shrug. He spread his hands on the tabletop. Nice manicured fingernails. Cared for, but not overly femme. Everything in moderation. It was probably why he was in facilitation instead of actual work. Control decided on you. I'm just passing the news along, his tone said, plainly. Don't get irrational. Refusal will mean dismissal. You're not serious. Sometimes you just have to take refuge in cliché. Sadly, yes. As if he was anything else, ever. I settled back in my chair, looked out over the restaurant again, with its checkered tablecloths and its smell of ersatz and human sweat. It would do no good to rip his head off right now. He would just get reattached unless I dropped it in a vat of something corrosive enough. Even if I did, it would only buy me a little time. They could broadcast a kill code. I wasn't stupid enough to think we'd found every implanted dismiss switch in my reinforced bones and enhanced muscles. Even if I had, there would be operatives after me. The whole city would be a trap, and it wouldn't be personal. Nothing ever is. Why? It surprised me, hearing the unanswerable come out of my own mouth. I hadn't asked such a stupid question since my intake interview, back when I was a frightened little warm body. I mean, why this kid? What about his parents? Sam sighed. He reached up and pinched the bridge of his completely nondescript nose. It was by far the most emotion he'd ever shown. Then he told me. I started laughing, audibly, loud enough that a couple smoke-puffing warm bodies eating late lunch or early dinner glanced in our direction, incuriously. The vapor probably deadened the taste of synth protein. I'd like to say it was then I decided, but I'd be lying. When I took the job, I had every intention of seeing it through. The first step is always to watch. Some fully implemented assholes think practically indestructible means run in like an idiot and waste resources. Not just ammunition, but time, effort, emotion.
Just because you can control the autonomics doesn't mean you don't feel anything. I wish they would have told me that when I volunteered for the process. Then again, I wouldn't have cared. I had to get out of the projects, and quick. I look and sound nothing like I did, but every time I venture into the crumbling concrete tenements, I have to clamp a subroutine over my heart rate, so I don't end up feeling young, warm-bodied, and terrified all over again. This wasn't the projects, though. This was a nice suburban ring street, live trees and all. Static gens on each corner to keep the air a little cleaner, so the greenery didn't bend and die under a choking layer of ground smog. The houses had permabrick faces. It took serious money to look like the antique middle class nowadays. This entire neighborhood was joint corporate owned, what they used to call company housing. The houses don't all look the same, but the differences were all of the same kind. The kid's house was middle of the block. I settled across the street in a hyper-grown tree. It looked like a birch crossed with something, but I didn't bother to test its helix to find out. My camo suit matched its shifting shades, but I might as well have been naked. Precious few warm bodies think to look up. The permanently cloudy bowl of the city's sky isn't very attractive. Some said that out in the waste, there's desert sunshine, but I didn't know. Not then. A sleek silver rail bus paused at the corner. A gaggle of school kids, all in corporate uniform, tumbled out. Navy blazers, the crest of their parents' corp owners stitched in shimmer thread. Trousers for boys and plaid skorts for girls. The agents were already the loudest, each one with a coterie of bees taking their cues from the dominants. The rest fell elsewhere on the scale. Gamma, epsilon. But there was one they all avoided. A thin, gangly kid with a cap of dark hair and a Knifle Corps badge on his blazer. The camo suit ruffled, having to work a little harder because I'd gone too still. My instinctive shifting, mimicking the tree's motion as an unsteady breeze flirted with its force-grown green branches, had paused. Was it then? Every once in a while, I replay the moment, searching for an internal seismic event. I don't know, even now. I watched, now making fractional movements with the tree, as one of the agents shouted at the dark-haired boy. Scarface! The agent, a freckle-faced redhead who had probably just squeaked past the border into management material, added a few more. Retard! Freak! The taunts flew with a snatched-up stone. The dark-haired kid's head snapped aside. I lifted the knocks, carefully, swept the entire group of kids. Some of the bees blanched, the other kids shied away, and one of the other A's, a girl with long, light, platinum hair that had to have been coated in, made a face. I read her lips. Leave him alone, Croy. Croy didn't think so. Got a girlfriend, freak? A thread of bright crimson traced down the kid's cheek. His eyes were big and bright, and the hate in them was clearly visible. Or maybe I was just projecting, because I would have fought back, even at that tender age. This kid didn't. He just hitched his backpack up and trudged down the street, away from the now laughing group of bee-gens around Croy the Redhead. I dropped the knocks. They dangled against my chest. Huh. Knifle Corp was heavy-duty genetics. They worked hand in glove with the agency on some aspects of implementation. They also did a lot of embryonic coding, building better babies for those who could afford them. Nothing like a good, solid, legal coding to set your child off on the right foot, or an expensive and technically illegal one if you wanted said kid to have a leg up. A couple more pebbles hit the sidewalk behind the dark-haired boy, with desultory clipping sounds. He put his head down, thin shoulders slumping. The posture should have shouted, "Victim." Unfortunately, there was a certain arrogance to it, probably fueled to the fire when facing unsteady agents. Scuffed brogans, frayed hems on his trouser legs, his collar was shabby and his blazer worn at the elbows. Puzzling. The kid was a significant investment, and they let him run around like this? Investment or not, I had a job to do. It wouldn't take much time at all. Could have done it already if I'd wanted to make a scene. But no, quick and relatively quiet was the order. He climbed the steps, head still down, and put his thumb on the print lock. I heard the click all the way across the street, my senses dialed up and pinpointed. Croy was still loafing at the end of the block with his coterie, laughing loudly. The others had begun to peel away in smaller groups, only the closest in status or relationship to the agents walking with them. The platinum girl flipped her hair pertly over her shoulder, a nice, balanced group of bees buzzing around her. She'd probably breezed right through the initial dominance tests. Jeffrey. His name breathed out sub-vocally. I almost twitched, not realizing it had come from me. The kid couldn't have heard, but he halted as the door locks chucked open in response to the print locks nudging, and looked over his shoulder. Those eyes, huge and dark and... what, haunted? That was absurd. There was no such thing. Of course, there was no such thing as him, either. Yet there he was, in broad, even if UV-free daylight, that scar on his chin quivering a little. Why hadn't they reconstructed it better? They had the tech, and if he was what Sam had said, a creature right out of Sims and fairy tales, this made no sense. I was thinking too much. I should have just done it then. Instead, I went to see Barlow. Pop fizzing of static-laden gunfire, lots of cheap blue neon, the smog close and choking, building a layer of grime on all surfaces. Everyone who can afford them wears nasal filters. It makes the projects a land of silver proboscis insects, hurrying back and forth, ducking when flying ammunition passes overhead like a wave. Rooftops belong to drug lords and runners. Whole wars fought over certain streets or desirable vantage points. Agents don't need filters. Still, every time I ventured into the projects, I wore them, partly to fit in and partly because, well, why make it harder on the nanos? They recharge themselves, renew the body. They're every little practically immortal's helper, and after a while I felt pretty protective of mine. I'm just a skin sack for the whole beneficial colony to carry itself around. But still, the agency can't broadcast a kill code to your own nanos. The survival imperative's too strong. So it was the implanted dismiss switches, and scans could find most of those suckers, even the most ingeniously hidden. Of course, more could be inserted if you got maintenance or reworking. A lot of agents figure, oh well, the agency keeps you in the red as a matter of course. Might as well get upgraded and add to your debt. Stupid. Barlow had deactivated a clutch of hidden switches I didn't know existed inside my flesh, and I paid him untraceable hard Bitcoin and information for the service. Still, he survived in the projects. It would be idiotic to not leave a few in me, just for insurance. I hunched my shoulders and hurried along, mimicking the crowd's flow. Dirt-colored caftan, grime smeared on my face, the corroded silver glints of new nasal filters reworked to seem old. I was just another anonymous, hustling bit of scurryware. I surfaced at the Rollin Ave station and kept working my way, meandering, to Circuit Corda. There wasn't any point in going directly to him. Make every move as if you're being tracked. That's just good tactics. It makes the times you slip the leash and drop off the grid much better. Sometimes I even do it randomly. Sometimes I do it and pop up in the same place. If the agency is watching, I want to be normal. No agent ever goes without breaking the leash a few times, or trying to. Every agent has shadow side contacts. If you stuck to only the official ones, you'd be dismissed for ineffectiveness soon enough. Barlow, though, wasn't quite officially unofficial enough. For one thing, I wasn't sure who owned him. A couple corporations thought they did. But the more I dug, oh, very carefully, respectfully, to be sure, the less I knew. If he wasn't owned, or if he was only slightly owned, well, that was interesting. Nobody's free anymore. I wasn't even sure anyone had ever been. Even cannibals out in the waste had to trade with city scrappers, or so I heard. Anyway, I slid into Circuit and dropped off the tracking grid in a new way, ducking through a Fantong restaurant and the smoky steam hell of the kitchen. Cheap, stat hydroponic produce and vat-grown proteins slathered with synthetic seasonings, imitating what it used to taste like. Or just someone's idea of what it used to taste like. It could break your brain to think about too deeply. Barlow was now in a repurposed rail bus hanging over Martell, deep in the circuit. He looked up and grunted as I slid through the bead curtain hanging just inside the regular entryway, a skinny old white-haired man with ancient hyperalloy implants at knees and elbows. A scan would show him as only a little implemented, not even up to a minimum security standard for a drug runner or a corporate officer. He had an ocular over one eye. Good work without a tag. That was another thing. His implementation wasn't even back-alley registered. It was completely innocent of anything approaching a serial. Which meant the agency would hotlist him in a split second. They're the power they are because of their stranglehold on implementation. Even illegals pay them. One way or another. There she is, Barlow rasped. His nose was incredibly long, and he scrubbed the back of his liver-spotted right hand under it. My little wind-up girl, what'll it be? What have you brought, old papa? Good afternoon, sir. I found him through a contact I had to liquidate a few years ago. Poor old Peanock, just smart enough to get into a game he was too dumb to survive in. How are you feeling? Soft and polite was the best way to handle the cranky old bastard. Oh, she wants something big, does she? What now? Only visits when she needs things. Ungrateful little girl. He jabbed a finger at me, stained orangish by ersatz nicotine. His fluff of white hair was a rooster's tail, lifted high and proud. Not that I'd ever seen a rooster except on packets of Capona cigarettes, but still. I can leave. I turned aside to study the glass case near the door. Little trinkets scattered across stained, silvery tinsel cloth. He had a legitimate pawner's license and paid his bribes to enforcement punctually. If you're busy, sir. He snorted a very rude term, shuffled around his counter. One claw shot out, closed around a half-full bottle of ersatz rye. He took a healthy draught of it, scrawny throat working, before offering me the bottle. I lifted it to my lips, politely, but as usual, he didn't check to see if I drank. Instead, he went past me and bolted the door, turned the ancient sign with its old-fashioned blonde pin-up girl showing her warm body ass to closed, and shuffled back for the counter. Come back. Might as well scan you while you're here.
though you're clean.
Maybe. I carried the bottle back. Sir, I have a question.
Oh, I'll bet you do.
It's about egress.
That got his attention.
He stopped, turned around, and eyed me from top to toe. A leisurely survey I suffered, letting the bottle dangle, thinking about the fractional application of force that would turn its heavy-bottomed corn glass into a weapon. His response wasn't what I expected. His bloodless tongue wet his lips, a dry lizard flicker.
My God, Sarah, what kind of trouble you in?
It wasn't until I was back out in the ring, my project's protective coloration discarded, and my head full of the weird humming that always happens when a job heats up, that I realized what was bothering me. There were plenty of other agents who wouldn't make a fuss. My psych profile was crystal clear, I should know. They'd analyzed me 20 ways for each month of my life. Over and over, question after question, while I was strapped into the sensa chair, my warm body responses monitored endlessly. Of course, they wondered about the triggering event. People don't just walk in off the street and request implementation. Oh, you know, sure they do. But I was good material. If I'd been born in the ring, I might have passed some dominance tests and ended up a corporate somebody. My health scan was clean, my legal record fairly spotless, my grades, before I dropped out and went to work running to survive, had been respectable. Why do you want implementation? What does it mean to you? I gave the same answer in 100 different ways. I'm tired of being poor. The projects are a dead-end street. I heard there are implementation programs where you can work off your debt. As if I was some starry-eyed idiot who believed you could ever work it off. I watched the kid's house. The windows were squares of golden light. Rifle would be best, piercing even shock-resistant film. No muss, no fuss. I'd be gone before the body hit the ground. Just a shattering and a light thud. Painless and easy for him. Why wasn't I doing it? Why was I thinking, instead, about the past? It turned out I was a great candidate for full implementation. All my measurements right square in the optimal zone. A doctor in the free clinic, hard Bitcoin required, no records kept, rejects fallen from ring grace doing both staff and medical work, had remarked as much, offhand, while he eyed my scan on temp film that was already eroding, my feet in the stirrups and the cold probing between my legs. It only took a few minutes before I was scraped empty, cauterized, and out the door. The cramping only lasted an hour. Why tell the agency that? Greed, I figured, was an acceptable motive for what I was asking for. The other wasn't their business. I could have ended up security detail, but I'd been skimmed off the top and slated for delicate agency work. Erasures, mostly. Sometimes warnings. Sometimes one side or the other of a corporate war when one half, or both, received agency aid. Even interagency turf wars. Waste of resources, those. But what do I know? I'm just a tool, kept sharp in a drawer and taken out for certain events before dropped back in to wait for the next. This house, closed up and prim behind its permabrick, was just like every other damn one in its row. Except, how many others were sitting on a secret this big? What was really bothering me? Questions. Just like usual, only this time they weren't the usual ones. Why, really, would the agency send me? Were they asleep at the switch? My psych profile was unexceptionable, even where it detailed my rebellious streak. You couldn't be a good agent without one.
thinking on your feet and solving problems with the required...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?